The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
I'm Brian Sullivan, and you're listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. Our show airs live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern. Listen in.
It is 5 a.m. at CNBC Global Headquarters, and here is your top five at five. Stocks putting a skid to that recent skid, with the three major indices surging more than 1% and the Dow getting above that 30,000 level. Now, that boost is coming as congressional leaders appear to be making some real progress on a virus aid package with just days left to get a deal done. We are live in Washington with the latest there. The head of Health and Human Services putting a new timestamp on mass COVID-19 vaccinations in this country when he says the most Americans will get the treatment. And break out the shovels and the salt. The East Coast is bracing for its first major winter storm of the season, with up to a foot of snow or more in some parts of the Northeast. And the mad dash to get all that holiday shopping done and the gifts in on time. The big challenges shipping companies are facing amid the surging demand this year. It is Wednesday, December 16th, 2020, and you are watching Worldwide Exchange right here on CNBC. Top of the morning to you. I am Dominic Chu in for Brian Sullivan today. Here is how your money in the global markets are setting their day up. Futures indicating an extension to yesterday's gains. You can see the Dow Jones implied higher by just a modest 60 points. The S&P up by about roughly 8 at the opening bell. And the Nasdaq implied higher by roughly 37 to 38 points. Now, this is after the major averages snapped their recent losing streak. Yesterday, all three indices climbing more than 1%. Amid those positive developments on stimulus talks out of Washington, D.C., we've got more on that in just a moment. The Nasdaq actually closing at a new record high, believe it or not, up more than 40% for the year so far. Still one of the biggest gainers here in the U.S. markets. Investors will also be watching the Federal Reserve as it wraps up its final two-day policy meeting of 2020 this afternoon. The central bank is releasing its decision at 2 p.m. Eastern time, with Chairperson Jay Powell set to speak for the press conference at 2:30 p.m. Eastern. CNBC will have complete coverage of that policy decision, as always. Taking a look at the bond market ahead of that big announcement, 10-year benchmark Treasury note yields ticking slightly lower, 92 basis points or 0.92%. 2-year benchmark note yields just about 12 basis points or 0.12%. And the 30-year long bond yields ticking slightly higher to just a hair below 1.67% there. Let's now go worldwide. Jumana Bersetchi is in our London newsroom with a look at the early trade in those bourses. Jumana, good morning.
Morning, Dom. Well, the theme of the European session today has been one of stronger PMI numbers. We got the activity data for the first couple of weeks of December, and they've been pretty strong across the board. So that is one of the reasons why we're seeing all of these European indices trade nicely in the green. The ZETCHE DAX in Germany up 1.6%. There, the manufacturing sector continues to hold up pretty strongly. But the big surprise we had today was in France. Very strong services PMI numbers, a big jump from what we had in November, coming in at 49.6 versus 42.9 consensus going into today. So really strong rebound there in services. FTSE 100, again, very strong rebound in the services numbers as well. But there, all eyes will be on Brexit discussions. There are reports that UK MPs have been told to be on standby for a potential Brexit agreement. We've been waiting for it for years and years. Today may be the day. So that's going to be the big headline to watch for later today. I just want to turn your attention as well to FX markets, because we're seeing some major moves here. The pound is trading through 135 here, not just on back of the PMI data, but going back to that Brexit news. We may finally get a resolution today. Big day potentially coming up in a few hours' time. And then the euro up at 122. So we talked about the big rebound in services data coming out of France. You've got a question, though, whether or not the good data is bad news for the ECB, given the euro goes from strength to strength, Dom.
All right, Giovanna Bersecchi live in London with the latest there. Thank you very much for that. To this morning's top stories now, including the latest on the push to get a deal on more coronavirus aid to Americans. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, and House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy meeting yesterday on getting a relief package and government funding bill done before that Friday deadline. While leaving the Capitol late last night, McConnell and Schumer telling reporters the group is making progress and they think they can get a deal done soon. If a deal isn't reached, the government, remember, funding will expire Saturday and 12 million people will lose unemployment benefits the day after Christmas. Meanwhile, Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar is offering an updated timeline on when most Americans can expect to get the COVID-19 vaccine. Here's what he said on the news with Shepard Smith just last night.
I believe that by the end of February into March, of course, depending on the decisions by our governors, but I believe we'll have enough supply out there to be reaching out into the general public for administration at your CVS's, Walgreens, Kroger's, and near the end of February into March.
End of February into March for vaccination. Secretary Azar, by the way, added the timeline for vaccinating the general public could be even earlier if the approval of the AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson vaccine candidates comes soon. And United Airlines has revealed that it started transporting Pfizer and BioNTech's COVID vaccine on passenger planes within the United States. The move comes as officials work to expand the distribution of that treatment. United flew five cargo-only flights delivering the vaccine from Brussels to Chicago. That happened earlier this month. Well, back to the markets. The major averages breaking a multi-day losing streak yesterday. But once again, it was the small caps, the Russell 2000, outpacing the big boys in the Dow, the Nasdaq, and the S&P. That small cap index rising 2.5% to close at a record high. The index has now more than doubled from its 52-week low that it set back during the pandemic lows in March. Joining me now is Mark Avalone, president of Potomac Wealth Advisors. Mark, is it encouraging to see those small caps play such a huge leadership role as of late?
Yes, it represents a broadening out of the market, and that's based on the reopened trade, a return to more cyclical, growth-oriented economy in a broader sense away from a few tech names. So it's very healthy for a bull market to not have such narrow leadership. And this movement in small caps is part of that. The small cap sector, a lot of financials are in there, and we expect financials to rally next year. There are a lot of headwinds for the financial sector, for from an investor standpoint, they look very attractive right now.
All right, so if there's a broadening out of this overall rally, that implies then that it's a good thing. It's constructive for 2021. What's the outlook given the fact that we've got multiple indices in the U.S. either at or near record highs?
Right. So valuations are a concern, and everybody's saying, hey, we may get a little froth here. And these IPOs this week indicate a lot of frenzy, which is typical of a risk posture that people should be aware of. But when you look at 2021 and you look at the Fed continuing to be accommodative, we look at what we're calling the roaring 2020s, where people are going to go out and eat and play and shop and travel and go to Vegas and spend money. And you couple that with Fed stimulus, perhaps a split Washington, D.C., favorable earnings comps. You've got so many factors. We're going to have an M&A frenzy next year. There's going to be a shakeout from this COVID economy, and companies are going to look to partner up. You're starting to see it. And we think all of this is going to create a strong underpinning of stocks, even if we have a little bumpy ride for the next few weeks as the market shakes out some of these huge gains.
You mentioned, Mark, that your bigger broad plays here are financials, which you think are going to be bid into next year, as well as the small caps. I wonder, we've talked so much about this notion that technology has been a massive leader, tech and communication services, so far in 2020, especially since the pandemic lows. Our own Jim Cramer says he thinks the work from home trade is coming back because lockdowns are going to come. How exactly does tech shake out in terms of the next few months?
Well, we're not abandoning tech. What we're doing is we're reducing the significant overweight that we had, which was a smart trade for our investors. Technology is here to stay, whether we're in the home or not. Flex time is here to stay. This all or nothing approach that once we get a vaccine, everything we've been doing for the past 9 months goes away is not going to happen. The commercial real estate folks that I talk to say there's a permanent shift in the way people work and the way companies are going to pay for overhead and real estate expense. And they're going to bring down these occupancy costs. They almost have to. So it's going to be one of the competitive advantages business have if they can reduce their footprint. So we're looking at this work from home and technology being implemented across the board and businesses bringing it in-house with enterprise software as a permanent state. So for the when I say we're broadening it out, it simply means we're more or less equal weighting tech because tech is not going anywhere.
All right. Mark Avalone, Potomac Wealth Advisors, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Good to be here.
When we come back on the show won't go on. The executive director of the American Ballet Theater, the ABT, explains the very tough decision making really then scrapped their entire 2021 performance schedule. And then later on, more progress in the fight against COVID-19 as the FDA gives the green light to one at-home test. We've got a very busy hour still ahead when Worldwide Exchange returns after this.
What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close? Or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Welcome back. That's a live shot right now of New York City, Midtown Manhattan, Times Square. The streets are clear, but we've got a big snowstorm coming, so city's already in preparation mode now for that big storm ahead. Well, not too far from there. For ballet companies and theaters around the world, December means the Nutcracker season, of course, though this year performances have a very different look to them. The American Ballet Theater pivoted their typical Nutcracker traditions, showing a virtual version in Times Square, not far from where you were just looking at. And after a year of postponing performances and pivoting to digital releases, American Ballet Theater announced it will have to cancel its 2021 season at the Met due to COVID concerns. Joining us now is Kara Medoff-Barnett. She's the executive director of the American Ballet Theater. Thank you very much for joining us. Just how important and significant is this move here, and why did you take it? It seems so drastic with a COVID vaccine just in the offing.
Thanks for having me, Dom. We are devastated to have to cancel a second Met season in a row. You know, ABT is America's national ballet company, but New York is our home, it's our headquarters, and we eagerly anticipate every spring returning to the Metropolitan Opera House to perform for our loyal fans. It is a tradition that ABT has had since 1976. We've had regular seasons at the Metropolitan Opera House. So to have to cancel for a second year in a row due to the ongoing pandemic to protect the health and safety of our artists, our staff, our crew, and of course our audiences is just, it's truly devastating. At the same time, we know that we will be back soon, hopefully in live performances in New York in the fall. And in the meantime, delivering our artistry to audiences around the country and our fans in New York City via digital and hopefully some live outdoor socially distanced performances as the spring and summer arrive. It's just too hard to get enough people together behind the scenes to safely rehearse. We need public assembly. We need close physical contact, not only to perform, but sure, also to bring people together to rehearse these epic ballets.
So Kara, I mean, it's fair to say that many of our audience here are patrons of the arts, and especially the ballet in New York City as well. Financially speaking, how exactly will this impact the ABT? How will it impact your performers and all of the other people associated with the entire company? This is huge because it means that a season is perhaps not, I mean, it's physically not there. But what exactly does that mean for your health, financially speaking, going down the line?
Sure. It's major. We rely on earned revenue. We have no ticket sales, no touring fees now for 2 years in a row for 2020. And the lion's share of our earned revenue is now gone for 2021. At the same time, we continue to provide exceptional education programs and to generate some earned revenue that way, as well as to train the next generation of artists around the country. And we also have managed to inspire generous philanthropists, individuals, foundations, and corporate sponsors, corporate brands that want to align with us and support our ongoing creativity through crisis. So philanthropy has really been sustaining us and will continue to sustain us during this time until we can return to standing ovations and robust ticket sales at the Met and at our other theaters around the world.
All right, so Cara, this is a big one, and I know because I love seeing live performances as well. What do you think? Do people come back to live theater, live events, the ballet in the coming years because we are over the vaccine process and into this recovery phase for the U.S. and world economy?
I think so, Dom. I think people will come rushing back once it's safe to do so. I think we don't only miss the hugs, the handshakes, the family gatherings. I think we miss that communal experience, the power of sharing live performing arts. And I look forward to the day when our theaters are once again packed. And in the meantime, I think that we're developing a lot of new skills, a lot of new storytelling techniques on new platforms. And so I think that we will continue to reach the widest possible audience and to make this art form and all of the performing arts more accessible on digital and hopefully in outdoor venues so that it's not only the people who can make it into the red velvet seats of the Opera House, but also fans and aspiring artists around the country who can have access to companies like ABT and our programs.
All right. Cara Medoff-Barnett from the American Ballet Theater, thank you very much. Good luck and keep us posted on the progress for your particular group.
Thanks so much, Dom.
All right, still on deck for the show. Facebook partially pulls its temporary ban on election ads ahead of key contests to determine control of the Senate.
Today's big number, 3.3 million. That's how many mortgages in the U.S. are in some stage of delinquency, according to housing data provider CoreLogic. That represents 6.6% of all outstanding mortgages.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Welcome back. Let's get a check on this morning's other top headlines. NBC's Philip Mena is in New York with the latest. Good morning, Philip.
A New York judge has ruled that the Trump Organization must turn over documents to the New York Attorney General. It's part of an investigation into whether President Trump altered the value of his assets for financial gain. The company tried to argue that the move would violate attorney-client privilege. President-elect Joe Biden is nominating a former campaign rival for a top cabinet position. Mr. Biden has tapped Pete Buttigieg to lead the Transportation Department. The former South Bend, Indiana mayor would play a critical role in carrying out Mr. Biden's effort to revitalize the nation's infrastructure. If confirmed, Buttigieg would be the first openly gay cabinet secretary. And finally, Tom Cruise is on a mission to ensure COVID safety protocols are followed on set. Two sources told Variety that the star tore into crew members on the set of a Mission Impossible 7 for failing to follow coronavirus guidelines. Audio obtained by The Sun revealed that Cruise was especially upset that the crew would break the rules when the film industry has been hit so hard by the pandemic, reportedly telling them if it happens again, they're gone. NBC News has not independently verified the authenticity or date of that audio tape. But Dom, sounds like Tom Cruise not playing around.
It's going to be Mission Impossible for a lot of theater goers this time around. So we'll see if you can get some of those kind of built back on pace here. Thank you very much, Philip Mina, for that update there. Still on deck for the show, investors looking to carry 2020 stellar gains into the new year. Thomson Research Group CEO lays out the key themes that she says investors need to watch in the year ahead. And join CNBC for a very special edition of the Healthy Returns live stream today with Dr. Anthony Fauci and Operation Warp Speed's Dr. Moncef Slowey. Meg Terrell leads that discussion on the COVID spread, the vaccine rollout, and keeping your business and family safe during this big holiday season. Register now at CNBCEvents.com. Good morning. A developing story out of Washington, D.C. Top congressional leaders signaling progress in talks over a COVID relief bill. Investors are following that progress very closely. Futures are mixed at this hour here. Slightly green, a live report from the nation's capital. That's coming up. Plus, bracing for a very serious storm. Snow and ice, as you see there, expected to hit a large part of the East Coast later on today. It is Wednesday, December 16th, 2020. You are watching Worldwide Exchange right here on CNBC. Welcome back to the show. I am Dominic Chu in for Brian Sullivan today, and here is how your money and investments are looking right now as we are halfway through the 5 a.m. Eastern Time hour. Stock futures are pointing to some modest gains at the opening bell, with the Dow implied higher by roughly 75 points, the S&P higher by about 10 points, and the Nasdaq up by about 40 implied at the opening bell if these futures moves hold into regular cash equities trading. Now, the Nasdaq is coming off another record close just yesterday. And don't forget the small cap stocks. The Russell 2000 also setting another record high as well. It's up about 100%. Yes, a doubling from its 52-week low that we hit back on March 18th. We are also watching energy prices. West Texas Intermediate U.S.-based crude prices closing yesterday at the highest level since February 26th before the pandemic lockdowns. But it's still very much in bear market territory, more than 27% off its recent 52-week high that we hit back in early January. And an analyst call to watch this morning. Twitter is upgraded to overweight from neutral over at J.P. Morgan with a $65 price target. The analysts there cite a bullish outlook on online advertising in 2021. And if you want to see more about that, go to my Twitter feed at The Domino. I've put out more of that thesis on Twitter's upgrade over at J.P. Morgan there. In corporate news this morning, the FDA is approving the first at-home rapid COVID test that does not require a prescription. The test is made by an Australian manufacturer, Illume, which will cost about $30 and be available at drugstores and online. Users will swab their own noses and then use the chemical solution and testing strip enclosed in the kit. The test connects to a smartphone app, which will display the results in as little as 20 minutes. Amazon is urging all its frontline workers in California to get weekly COVID tests. This includes warehouse employees and Whole Foods employees as well. Earlier this month, California issued new rules on COVID workplace safety measures, which included testing. And Facebook is lifting the temporary post-election political ad ban in Georgia. The move comes as the state prepares for a runoff election on January 5th, with two key Senate seats up for grabs. The tech giant has issued the temporary pause on ads in an attempt to stop confusion or abuse on the platform on the political front. Now to that big developing story out of Washington, D.C. Investors want to know if there is a chance a stimulus deal can be reached. Ilan Moy joins us now with the latest there. So, Ilan, are we optimistic more this time around?
Well, Dom, they did keep talking until late last night as lawmakers try to hammer out this deal before the end of the week, because that's when the government runs out of money, December 18th, and lawmakers are hoping to pass a comprehensive funding bill alongside a new COVID relief package. Now, Republicans and Democrats sounded pretty upbeat after several rounds of in-person negotiations on Capitol Hill yesterday, with the Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin dialing in over the phone. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said they are making progress and that he is optimistic that lawmakers will come to a complete understanding sometime soon. One thing that they already do agree on is that nobody is leaving town until this job gets done. Here's how McConnell put it to reporters earlier in the day.
We're not leaving here without a COVID package. It's not going to happen. We're going to stay here until we get a COVID package, no matter how long it takes.
We do expect those talks to continue today, John. And if they come to an agreement, Thursday is the day for a target vote in the House on both a combined funding bill and COVID relief package. Back over to you.
All right. So I've got a question here, Ilan. I mean, what is the actual risk that the government actually shuts down if lawmakers do not get some kind of a deal done on this front?
So the closer that we get to that Friday deadline, John, the more agreement you need, not just from leadership, but also from rank and file lawmakers to keep the ball moving forward and to get something passed. So because the time frame is really compressed, any one senator, especially over in that chamber, could hold up this process. Last week, when we faced a similar deadline, we already saw some saber rattling. We will see if any of those lawmakers make good on their threats. But they are working under a very tight deadline here, Dom, and that means that everybody's going to need to get on board.
All right, Ilan Moy with the latest there on the stimulus talks and the government shutdown. Thank you very much. Back to the markets now. And your next guest says, as investors gear up for 2021, the key themes from this year's COVID-19 outbreak will continue to influence stocks. Catherine Thompson is the CEO of Thompson Research Group. She joins us now. Catherine, thank you very much for being here. Let's talk about whether or not this market is something that investors can still feel comfortable being invested in, given the record high levels that we've seen in many parts of the market.
Yeah. So what are the things you got to look at, or what are the themes from last year that will carry into this next year? And when we focus on some of those industrial construction names, housing is going to continue to be the big, big theme. Last year, it was all about, I'm stuck in my house, I'm going to do outdoor projects and indoor projects. Now it's much bigger. It's more, I'm going to move from the Northeast to the Southeast and the Southwest, or I'm going to do that bigger home addition because I realized I don't have enough space in the house. So that's a theme we're going to carry through. And a name that, you know, there's several names that can benefit from that. And a lot of them have run up a lot. But there's a few handful of ideas. And one of those names that we've really focused on is a company called Ferguson, because they really went either way. They went both on the HVAC, the airflow management on the commercial side, but also they've got a massive residential side, which they're going to continue to benefit throughout 2021 and beyond.
So if you're going to take a look at some of those sectors that could be kind of more cyclical or economically sensitive in nature, you mentioned one of those. Are there other specific industry parts of the economy that you are looking at and specific companies that would benefit in that kind of environment in 2021 where those themes continue to play out?
You know, well, one of the themes, it's a little counterintuitive, but it's really in vogue to say commercial is dead. No one's going back to an office building, and you know, anything that touches commercial is going to underperform. And that's fairly well understood by the market. But as you have masses of people in that deurbanization move, when you have a commercial, a residential build out, typically you have about 10 to 18 months later, commercial build out. Plus you're going to have a lot more satellite offices. And so against that backdrop, there's some names that have been really beaten up that could see some upside just from a stock perspective, even though the current environment isn't great in the near term. So one of those names is Armstrong World. They do ceiling systems. You know, the interesting thing with Armstrong, too, is they've come out with a product that potentially can help mitigate the spread of airborne illnesses, including COVID. And then finally, another one, you touched it on the stimulus bill, Summit Materials, or heavy materials producer. They'll benefit both from kind of that deurbanization move on the commercial and the residential side, but also with any type of infrastructure bill or stimulus bill, they will also benefit.
All right. So I'm kind of curious. You're talking about companies in construction aggregates. We talk about them all the time. We're talking about companies like Vulcan Materials, Martin Marietta. Is it straight just a play on whether or not we get some kind of an infrastructure deal? Are there other ways that they benefit besides just perhaps a hypothetical large scale mass spend by the government on bridges, tunnels, roads, that sort of thing?
Yeah. So if you look at those companies, typically about half of their revenues are to the private sector, 50 to 60% are to the private sector. So residential and non-res. So these names clearly would benefit. The other thing, too, just to think about conceptually, is in an environment where you're probably going to see more new residential construction, these types of companies benefit in an outsized way, because not only are you pouring a slab for a home, but you're also building out the basic sidewalks and roads into residential developments. So it's not just about the what's going to happen on the infrastructure side, but you got to have rock to do any type of major new construction.
Catherine, we've also gotten within the last 24 hours or so some more headlines with regard to President-elect Joe Biden's administration talking about some of the key personnel moves for things like transportation and also the environment, an environment czar, the EPA, that sort of thing. Green and environmental conscious investing may be a big theme in 2021, given some more of that perceived tilt towards environmentally friendly type investing. Is there anything on that front thematically that could play out with regard to companies that could benefit?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there's lots of different, but kind of in the world that we play in, Owens Corning is going to be a big player in terms of they do insulation, but they also do roofing products. But another company that is focused on not just being carbon neutral, but carbon additive, is Interface, ticker symbol is TILE. They are also going to be a beneficiary in that whole green move. And then finally, it's a little bit of a play in the theme on turning the green, but it plays into greater regulation overall. And outsourced services such as Atlas Technical Services, ATCX, and then API Group, with ticker symbol APG.
All right, some big thematic investing points there. Catherine Thompson over at Thompson, thank you very much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, the other story everyone will be talking about on the East Coast, especially today, is the weather. A major winter storm forecast to hit the region later on today. NBC's Bill Cairns joins us with the latest. Bill, is this going to be as bad as all the predictions are making right now?
Not bad as far as damage and like cars getting stuck on the roads. A lot of it's going to hit tonight during the overnight. So that's the timing of the storm's actually pretty good. And we're not going to have a lot of power outages, so that's great too. But we are going to see a ton of snow. And there's no doubt about that. Some areas are going to get more snow with this storm than they did all last winter combined. So, yeah, it's going to be something. So right now on the maps, the blue shows you the snow already breaking out from St. Louis to Cincinnati, a little bit through the Ohio Valley, rain and even thunderstorms down along the Gulf Coast. So those two storms are going to combine into one, and that'll be our nor'easter. This time tomorrow, it'll be just off the New Jersey shoreline. So 70 million people are under winter weather advisories or winter storm warnings. The areas in red are under the warnings. So that's a huge area from Virginia all the way through central portions of New England. So here's the snowfall map. We've added the pink on there. That's 18 inches of snow forecast from central PA through the Scranton-Wilkes-Barre area, through the Catskills, near the Berkshires, even a few spots near the Worcester outside of Boston could get up to 18 inches. And the time to be off the roads is this afternoon. You do not want to be on the roads this afternoon in areas from northern West Virginia, Pennsylvania, the New York City area. The snow will be hard by about 6 to 8 p.m. this evening. And then southern New England after about 8 p.m. to midnight is when the heaviest snow will move in. And at times, it'll be like near whiteout and blizzard conditions. But I don't think the winds will be strong enough for this to be classified as a blizzard. Here's the snowfall totals. Unfortunately for you in D.C., just too warm. It looks like a little bit of snow and then some sleet, then rain after that. Philadelphia, you're going to go snow to period of sleet, then maybe a little snow on the end. You can see where the bullseye areas are. And even New York City looks like it has a chance for a foot of snow in Central Park. Boston and Hartford, more than that, 12 to 18 inches, Dom. So a big snowstorm.
These are approaching right now, Bill. Are there any other storms that we see that could possibly have any issue here going into the holiday season? We know transportation, travel, logistics, all of those things possibly in play.
That's right.
Not a lot of massive traveling given COVID, but still, there's transportation needs that will be affected. How exactly will that play out?
this storm, thankfully, is going to be in and out in a hurry. We'll be done with the storm by Thursday afternoon. And I was just looking at the extended forecast. There's no other big winter storms that are forecasted for the eastern seaboard from now to Christmas. But here's the one but caveat. It looks like we're going to have some very, very cold conditions arriving in the eastern half of the country for Christmas. So, you know, anyone with outdoor plans on Christmas may be difficult. It'll easily be the coldest air of the season. So, you know, at least it's not snow and ice. But, yeah, be prepared for a bitter blast as we head towards Christmas.
We'll all be bundling up, Bill. Thank you very much for the update there. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
Well, coming up on the show, the pandemic peak, deadlines and delays, a live report from the UPS Worldport facility in Kentucky, where many holiday shipments are being processed as we speak right now. But first, as we head to break, some of your other morning headlines. E-commerce site Wish is set to start trading on the NASDAQ today after pricing its IPO at the top end of the expected range. The company raising about $1.1 billion to give it an implied market value of more than $14 billion. Google reports a significant number of Gmail users had service problems yesterday afternoon. The company says the issues were resolved shortly before 7 p.m. Eastern time. And Twitter announcing it will shut down live video streaming app Periscope by March. Now, it bought that startup behind the app in 2015 for a reported $100 million, but Twitter says usage has been declining and it's too costly to maintain on the Twitter platform. Stay tuned. You are watching Worldwide Exchange on CNBC. It is the most wonderful time of the year and one of the most important and heartwarming sights of the holiday season. That is a live look at 30 Rock and Wah in New York City right now, where the Christmas tree is not lit up just yet there, but still a lot of stuff going on here. It goes on at 6 a.m., so just about 15, 16 minutes away from that tree getting all lit up pretty for the holiday season. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Andy Williams may have called this the most wonderful time of the year, but for the world's biggest shippers, it's also the most stressful time of the year. Frank Holland joins us now live from the UPS Worldport facility in Kentucky. You got to imagine it's a lot of stuff going on there right now and a lot of stress for sure.
Hey, good morning to you, Dom. You know, absolutely right. It's definitely stressful and a lot of work going on here. So here's an interesting number. 6,000 packages per minute can be sorted here at this facility you see behind me. As you mentioned, it's the UPS Worldport Hub in Louisville, Kentucky. And UPS and all the other carriers, they really need that speed as e-commerce, it just surges during this holiday season. So in the month of November, it actually spiked 27% higher year over year, with UPS handling the most volume, 450 million packages. UPS and FedEx are also handling vaccine deliveries along with all of our holiday gifts. Both have put surcharges on retailers that ship high volumes and even put limits on how much they can ship. UPS Chief Sales Officer Kate Gutman, that deals with those retailer contracts, says that was really about maximizing revenues and really trying to ensure on-time delivery of our holiday gifts.
We had to work with our customers and really collaborated on the plans by day, by origin, and what we could actually pull into the network. And there's a higher value when you run a system that is fully utilized, but you also want to ensure you don't over utilize that network or your service levels will decrease and then everyone's disappointed.
On-time delivery for UPS and FedEx, they both topped 95% for the week of Thanksgiving and Cyber Week. ShipMatrix, where we get the data from, they say anything over 95% is considered pretty good. Now, technically, the deadline for guaranteed delivery for ground was yesterday, but UPS and FedEx both say that really only applies to full coast-to-coast deliveries. As far as the real deadline, it really depends on your geography. They both have online tools where you can kind of calculate how long your delivery will take from one city to another one. So the good news here is, Dom, if you're a procrastinator like I tend to be, you still have time to try to get that delivery by Christmas. And, Dom, I know you wanted a new driver. I'm going to go out and shop for it, and hopefully it'll get to you by the holidays.
Well, it might be on that plane that just went overhead for you right now, Frank. This is also a very big week for vaccines, of course, with the vaccine rollout across the country, also holiday gifts. Are FedEx and UPS saying anything about that big storm that's headed for the East Coast? We just talked to Bill Cairns about that. How will it impact delivery and logistics there?
You know, Dom, absolutely. We did ask them about that. Both UPS and FedEx have a team of meteorologists. They say, of course, they're monitoring this storm, and they do have contingency plans in place should we experience some severe weather like we're expected to see. Both said this, their number one priority is keeping their team members safe, but they do expect to be able to continue to deliver both holiday gifts and vaccines.
All right. Frank Holland out in Louisville, Kentucky. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. On deck for the show, an optimistic market call could be ahead for 2021. And remember, Worldwide Exchange is now a podcast. It's another way to get the essential, actionable information that we bring you right here on Worldwide Exchange every morning. Look for us on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, or whatever your favorite podcast platform is, and subscribe to Worldwide Exchange today. All right, as you can see there, some of the biggest pre-market gainers so far in the Dow Industrials, Goldman Sachs, Visa, Walt Disney, Boeing, and Apple, all up about a half to 1%. As for the broader S&P 500, you can see some of the moves there and the big pre-market gains. Twitter, HP Inc., Otis Worldwide, DXC Technology, and News Corp, all up between 1.5% to almost 3% for Twitter on the heels or helped along by that big upgrade by JP Morgan Chase. Well, futures right now are pointing to some modest gains at the opening bell. As you can see, the Dow Jones implied higher by roughly about 87 points here. The S&P would be higher by about 12 and the Nasdaq higher by roughly 40 or so. Your next guest says it's possible we could see a pullback in the markets in the near term as a few risks still linger into the new year. But there are plenty of reasons for optimism as the calendar flips over into 2021. Let's bring in Greg Sarian, founder and CEO of Sarian Strategic Partners at Hightower. He's ranked the number 11 financial advisor among those top ones in Philadelphia and Pennsylvania, rather, by this year's Barron's. Thank you very much, Greg, for being here. So near-term pullback, does that mean I should wait to buy more stocks until they go on sale?
Good morning, Don. Thanks for having me back. We don't believe in market timing or advocate trying to time this market. That would have been a very difficult thing to do and a challenging thing looking at the last 9 months for sure. What we're suggesting is over the next 4 to 6 weeks, investors may see some bumps, some hiccups given this recent spike in cases, some recent shutdowns on both coasts. Are there more shutdowns coming? We won't see that evidenced in economic data probably for another 4 or 5 weeks. Then, of course, you've got the all-important January 5th Senate race, and the market's really counting on a divided government and not a huge change in tax rates, and we won't know that for sure for another 4 or 5 weeks. That being said, I think investors need to step back and look not just the next 4 or 5 weeks, but the next 4 to 6 months, because I do think there are some positive catalysts going into 2021.
All right. So you're a financial advisor. You have to kind of talk to clients and rework their portfolios as part of your job. What was the biggest thing that you had to do for the bulk of your clients in 2020 in kind of response to what happened with the COVID pandemic and the economic effects? And do some of those same themes carry over into 2021?
To answer your question, Don, it's making sure people were rebalancing, because emotions like fear and anxiety can have a detrimental impact on one's financial plan and portfolio decisions if not made with the fundamentals of a sound investment policy statement upon which investment decisions are made. And so having people going backwards over the last 6 or 9 months, rebalancing back to their target, whatever their stated weightings were from a sector and allocation point of view, and I think that's really important now, especially going forward. If you look at the winners of the last 3 years, they may not be the winners of the next 3 years. And making sure that you're not overly weighted in those red hot large cap growth spaces, but looking at some areas like value dividend stocks, which just in the last couple of months have really begun outperforming. So absolutely, rebalancing is a timeless discipline, hugely important in volatile markets like we've had.
So Greg, does that mean you're a true believer in this kind of broader rotation that people talk about, this notion that we are going to be seeing an outperformance, a reversion to the mean for some of these value-oriented type sectors, the ones that pay dividends, the ones that have been beaten up so much during the course of the COVID pandemic? Should we not be as focused on that mega cap technology trade? Is that what you're trying to say?
So I think let's keep it in perspective. Dom, we're not suggesting that those large growth tech names are falling out of bed. We're not suggesting that they're going to see a huge depreciation. That being said, their growth rates going forward may be more normalized, especially given the runs they've had the last 3 years. And if you follow this reopening theme and the delivery of vaccines and whatever a new normal looks like, we should see people going back to spending money, traveling, going out, which would lend itself to, yes, these dividend names, which have come back over the last quarter, really resuming some leadership over the next several quarters. And especially for investors who are retired looking for yield, with rates as low as they are, dividend paying stocks are a great place to generate some income if you're using your portfolio to live on.
Are there specific parts of that market within value, dividend payers, whatnot, that you're focused on specifically, companies or industry groups that you think are more attractive versus others?
Yeah, we do. We believe the financials are well positioned. We believe healthcare stocks, again, this trend towards vaccine and delivery of new drugs towards therapeutics is not going to be going away. We're also believers, Dom, that people should be getting more money overseas. We believe this new administration is going to have a less hawkish policy towards China and the surrounding countries. And like value stocks, emerging market stocks have woefully underperformed the U.S. markets over the last 3 to 5 years and really made some nice comeback here recently. So that's another area where we want to make sure clients are not underweighted.
All right, we've just got a little time left here. What keeps your clients up at night the most? What's the biggest worry that they have right now?
You know, we're talking to clients about the debt issue, Dominic. We agree with you. A third stimulus plan is needed. We've got to get money into the hands of those who've been most affected by the pandemic, and we'll put it back into the economy. That being said, we're over 100% debt to GDP as a country, over $30 trillion in debt. You're seeing that bottom 20% of the workforce taking on more lower quality consumer loans, credit card debt, student loans. At what point do we begin to see that debt evidence itself in deterioration of corporate earnings, a recession? That's something we're thinking about looking at. I don't think that's an issue for another 12 to 18 months, but it's on the radar.
All right. Greg Sarian, thank you very much for those market thoughts and happy holidays, sir.
Thank you.
Before we wrap up things today, we want to send a very big and hearty holiday congratulations to our Worldwide Exchange colleague, Evan Falk. He and his wife, Jill, just welcomed their daughter, Davina Rose Falk, to the world on Monday afternoon. You can see they're such a cutie. Davina coming in at 7 pounds, 8 ounces and 20 inches long. Evan says mom and baby are doing fantastic. Big congrats also to Davina's big sisters, Anna and Scarlett. Congratulations, Falk family. That does it here for us on Worldwide Exchange. Squawk Box is coming up next.
You've been listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. You can always catch us live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern only on CNBC.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.